Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. This is the Entree Architect Podcast, episode 85. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. He committed to taking all seven sections of the architecture registration exam in 7 days. He launched a new scholarship program where recent graduates of architecture school can be reimbursed for the cost of their first exam. And he's worked with his team to rebuild the operational structure of his organization to better serve its members. This week on the Entree Architect Podcast, I welcome back my friend, the now past president of the American Institute of Architecture Students, Charlie Kletcha. This episode of the Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by the Entree Architect Report. That's my free weekly newsletter. Subscribe at entrearchitect.com/newsletter. Charlie Kletcha, welcome back to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you back. We've had you before on the podcast, episode 62, for anybody who wants to check that episode out. We sort of got into Charlie's origin story and where he's come from and talked about sort of just as he started becoming, getting into his new role as president of AIAS National. And now we're going to be talking to him as he's exiting as president of AIA National, literally on his way out the door. So talk about that a little bit, Charlie. I mean, where are you now, and what are you doing, and what's your sort of your current status right now?
Sure. So we just this past weekend had our annual grassroots leadership conference. And part of the opening ceremonies actually for that conference are held at the National Building Museum, where we inaugurate the new board. So we actually have an oath of office, everything. I got to read that for the incoming board of directors. And so as of last Thursday, Danielle Mitchell is now the AIAS National President, and I assume my term as past president. So I'll be on the board for one more year. Running elections committee and doing some alumni network development. Later today I pack up the car and head back to Detroit to start my career.
No, very cool. Where's Danielle from? Where does she call home?
She's from Pennsylvania, just graduated from Penn State.
Okay, great.
So she moved to DC beginning of July. We have the new officers come in July 1st, so they get a bit of a ramp up, and now it's all on them.
So you get a nice overlap. Yeah. Well, the main reason I wanted to have you back is because proceeded with your ARE exams, your architectural review, architectural registration exams, in a very interesting way, so in a very, very public way. You studied for the ARE for 7 weeks, right? And then you took the exams themselves in 7 days, right? One after another.
That's correct. Yep.
And so what was your goal in doing that? What was the point of doing that?
The overarching goal of the campaign was really to promote a new scholarship fund that the AIS has launched, and really just to encourage recent graduates to get started on the path to licensure as early as possible, just to take that first exam and get that out of the way, so it's not this looming mysterious thing out on the horizon, but to start making some forward momentum toward their goals.
And that's a relatively new way of taking the exam. I mean, when I took the exam, you needed to finish your IDP, your intern development program, before they allowed you to take the exam. And that has changed, right? You can take
the exam
right out of school, right? As long as you've completed your education. You can't take it before graduation, correct?
Correct, right. Yeah. So NCARB has recently, it's called early eligibility, and allows, in most jurisdictions, testing to begin before the experience component is complete.
Yeah, which is great, because you can come right out of school with all of that sort of momentum that you gain in architecture school and roll right into it and take your exams and try to get those out of the way. And then you just finish up your IDP and the rest of your hours that you're required. And then you can be eligible for licensure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do
you, a lot of advantages to that approach when you're still sort of in the mindset of school, still used to studying and cramming and some of the content areas are actually a lot easier when you still got them fresh in your mind. Structures, for instance, is the one that's always cited as the sooner you take it after school, the better. Because as an entry level, designer, you're not likely to be encountering a whole lot of structures.
Was there anything else you learned while you sort of studied for this and took this? Anything that for you personally or for the exam itself that could improve while you took this 7 and 7?
Well, I think there's a lot of improvements. I'm actually a little jealous that I'm not going to be taking ARE 5.0. I'm very excited to see some of the developments in new content types, the idea of case studies and hotspots and things like that. So I think a lot of improvements are already sort of in the pike, and I think the reformatting both of the ARE and IDP to align to the sort of realistic breakdowns of practice are definitely a step in the right direction.
Do you think that this change will actually encourage more architects to become licensed?
That's the hope. That was sort of the message all along, is that a lot of the myths about licensure that may have contributed to some having, a very prolonged period on that path are going away. So for instance, it's often assumed that you have to have experience in an architecture firm in order to do well in the exams. And through this campaign, I've also debunked that myth. I actually have no experience in an architecture firm. And while it took a great deal of hard work and study, I was still able to do well on the exams without experience.
What was your biggest surprise?
The results, I guess.
And we didn't mention the results. What were the results? Did you pull this thing off?
I passed all 7 on the first go.
That's awesome.
That was as much as I would have loved to have been optimistic throughout. I had to be sort of cautious about it, and I was hoping for 4, and was considering 5 out of 7 a best case scenario, just based on statistics, I guess. There weren't any that I walked out of, totally thinking I bombed, but I just sort of practically assumed there's no way I'm going to pass all 7. And that was never the intention. It was about committing to a plan and taking the exams, and not so much about what the results were.
Was it harder or easier than you expected to do it the way you did it?
Um, A little bit of both. I think there's, in many ways, it was easier to take them all at once because there's a great deal of overlap in some of the content between the exams. So studying for all of them at once was sort of self-reinforcing. And then just taking them all back to back, there was something kind of gratifyingly epic about that. I remember walking out of either the first or second exam and thinking, you know, man, if I had studied for even half as long as I did preparing for this, and then sat for one exam, to walk out of that thinking, okay, that was, you know, 4 or 5 weeks leading up to one day. Now I have to do that 6 more times. I remember thinking that that would be, you know, a bit of a daunting thing to think. So in my mind, at least, there was something very satisfying about even just taking on all 7 back to back and just knocking them out.
Yeah, I mean, there once was a time, and a lot of the old timers will, I'm sure, are thinking this right now, that you would take all exams, and I think there were 12 of them at the time, all of them in one day, and it was only offered one day per year. And so you would study up to that point, all of the architects who had want to be licensed for that year would all roll into a gigantic auditorium. They'd sit down and they would take all of the exams for an entire day, including drafting, and they'd all have their portable drafting boards. And so this is sort of reminiscent of that you sort of can now do a very similar thing where you can create your own opportunity to get this thing done in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah, and I think there were some other things that were kind of lost in the shift away from that process. I've told a number of people that in that system, because it was all at one time, there was a certain sense of camaraderie and collegiality built into the process because you knew anyone who was getting ready to test. You know, if you were in an office, chances are that the workload on those interns would kind of scale back, ramping up that time in June because all of the interns were distracted, and so they were all preparing together. Now, under the current format, even with if you do seek out a group to study with, chances are you're not studying for the same exam, not testing at the same time. And if you don't proactively seek out someone to study with, it can be a very isolating, a very lonely journey to prepare. It doesn't have that sort of built-in, you know, sort of mutual hold to the goals.
Yeah, I've heard of several study groups being put together where the intent is to sort of schedule a group of interns to study together for the same exam, all take it on the same day, and then study for the next one together, all take it on the same day. I think that's a very good approach as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would you encourage others to commit to their own 7 and 7, or do you think that it's a Is it a good way to do it practically, or was it really just sort of a way to get the word out and it wasn't really the best way to do it mentally
Hey,
and personally?
for personally, I can certainly understand anyone who would be ready to take that on. But I think the biggest barrier to this approach would be the financial one, committing to paying for all 7 of the exams. If you paid as a student to start an NCARB record, you have that other 250 to pay as well. Excuse me. And then to purchase the resources necessary to study for all 7 at the same time. That can be a big challenge.
Yeah. But what about the actual 7-day exam period? Is that something that is practical? Is that really something that people should strive for? I mean, should they look at you as an example of the way to do it, or is it really just a way to kind of get the word out about, you know, the exam and how it can be done this way?
Yeah, no, I think again, if you can afford to take the time off, if you have the support from your firm or wherever you're at in your career, to commit to it, to spend that kind of time. I didn't do much other work that entire 2-week span. I scheduled all my exams kind of in the middle of the day. So if you can do it, yeah, it's win or lose, I think regardless of how many you pass in that go, I think there's a lot of benefit to stacking them together like that, just for the experience of getting through it. If you fail any in that run, you know, 60 days later you can reschedule and keep that momentum going.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a positive change that NCARB has put together here. When I took my exams in the 90s, we could take them anytime we want, just like you can now, but we had to go through. Actually, I took the exam just before IDP was required, so I didn't have to do the IDP, but I did need to do the hours. There were still hours involved that needed to be recorded, and it had taken so long to get to that point that I was already, I had my own company, and I was starting Five Cat Studio because Anne-Marie was already licensed, and so many other things were distracting me that I never got around to the license part of it. You know, my wife was already licensed, so we didn't technically need it to practice architecture. It took so long for me to finally commit to the time to do it, and it took me over a year to do them all because I didn't commit to them to do them all at the same time. I gave myself lots of time to kind of schedule them around the rest of my life. So I would say that it would be a very good thing for students who are coming out of school who have that mindset, who are on that in that momentum, to take them as soon as possible. Not necessarily take them all in 1 week, but to schedule them right away, and put them on your calendar, get them signed up, and take them as soon as possible. And if you pass them all, then you're done. And if you don't, then at least you got most of them finished. So I think it's a great thing. You also launched this year at AIAS National this Professional Advancement Support Scholarship, the PASS, PASS. Could you talk about that a little bit, what that campaign's about and that scholarship program?
Yeah, sure. So the biggest deterrence we saw, at least a perceived deterrence from recent graduates getting started, were, the financial burden, as I mentioned, and the sort of general lack or alternatively overwhelming of information in terms of what resources are out there. So while the 7-7 campaign and sort of the documenting of my journey going through it and what I was studying, that sort of was intended to approach the information aspect of that. And so this scholarship is really intended to address the other side, the financial side. So what it does is for recent graduates of the AIS, if they can pass one exam within a year of graduating, they can apply for this scholarship and be reimbursed for the full cost of that exam. So we launched initially an Indiegogo campaign to get the ball rolling. And it's now a permanent page on our website, both for donations to the scholarship fund and for applications to receive the scholarship. So that will be, the applications will actually go live this fall, now that we've built up a little bit of reserve in that fund. And I think the initial wave should be at least half a dozen to a dozen scholarships, depending on how we want to, spread that out strategically.
Yeah, so that's a great idea. So it encourages students to take them quickly, to do exactly what we're talking about doing here, and take the opportunity that they have to take the exam. And if you can take it and you pass it, you can then apply. Is that how it works? Then you can apply and say, I passed it within this certain amount of time. And then if you're accepted as one of the dozen scholarships, then you get reimbursed for that exam. What is the overall cost? You were saying that one of the deterrents of doing it all in one shot. What does it cost to do everything in one shot?
Well, so the exams themselves are $210 a division, so that's $1,470. As I said, if you haven't paid the balance on your NCARB record, that's another $250. And then the study resources, it really comes down to how much you need, what you need, what your study style is, and kind of which provider or providers you go with. So that can be anywhere from a few hundred dollars up to several thousands of dollars, depending on how much you invest in it.
What materials did you use to study?
I tried to use as many different things as I could get my hands on. Because this was a campaign of the AIS, we had a great connections to reach out to different providers. So Kaplan, for instance, is a sponsor of the AIS. We reached out to Architect Exam Prep, is a relatively new provider out of California that produces some excellent packages. I use those very extensively. And it just so happened that the AIA was just launching their partnership with Mark Tier of Black Spectacles to produce the AIA ARE Prep series powered by Black Specs, a video seminar basically led by Mike Newman, a professional out of Chicago, that goes through each division kind of topic area by topic area. And so I like I said, I basically used anything I can get my hands on and sort of provided my unbiased, unfiltered feedback on all of those different resources and what their certain strengths and weaknesses were.
That's great. That's excellent. So your final day here at in DC, as you've already, you're no longer AIAS president, right? It's the baton has been passed. Can you give us sort of a state of the Institute report, sort of give us an idea of what happened this past year and what you know is planned for this coming year?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of this year was, a lot of the accomplishments we had this year were sort of back of the house. So we were under, we were in the middle of a transition with our executive director. So we were onboarding our new exec, Nick Surface, this year. And that provided us the opportunity to really take take a hard look at many of our policies and practices at the national level on kind of an administrative and operational level. So some of the things we took on were a complete digital infrastructure overhaul. So we kind of streamlined a lot of our digital processes, which had been sort of hampering a lot of the operational aspects of the organization. Including membership processing that had previously been a very tedious and kind of analog a process, and we've shifted that over to a much more automated thing. We're on kind of a Google suite now, so we have cloud data storage and email integrated with calendars, Google Hangouts, all of the things we had kind of started using individually anyway. We did launch a few new campaigns. My own 7 and 7 and Pass campaigns were big pushes to highlight the professional development value of the organization and of membership. We also launched, or prepared and developed, and are now getting ready to launch the Archetype Project, which kind of is a balance to the sort of licensure track promotion of the Pass, is sort of a celebration of those trained in architecture who've gone on to a whole range of fields, including traditional practice in maybe non-traditional ways, and a whole host of other professionals in music, in fashion design, in graphic arts, and kind of across the board. So it's these individual little sort of podcast-style profiles on these professionals and how their education in architecture has contributed to what they do now.
Oh, I love that. Is that going to be hosted by a specific person, or is that sort of it's going to be individually produced videos?
The vice president was really leading. So Obi Okolo was really kind of leading that project. So he hosts a number of the videos, but he was doing that with the support of our membership committee, which is comprised of some of our members from all across the country. So you'll hear the voices of many many of our you know emerging student leaders. Kind of taking on these calls and running these interviews.
Yeah, that's a great idea to sort of bring the two, you know, the profession and the student body together. It's it's a great idea.
Yeah.
So, anything else going on? What's the what's the future look like at AIAS? Any ideas on future campaigns?
Yeah, it's the upcoming year is shaping up to be very exciting. We're already well underway on planning our annual conference for the end of this year. We always hold our big membership conference over New Year's. That will be in San Francisco from December 29th to January 1st. So that's a big, exciting thing. We're doing a lot of new things with the conference this year. Very excited about the venue and some of the events and speakers we've already lined up. The board will be taking on several new initiatives. I know the president has convened an international task force to look into what we provide to our international members. We have a handful, maybe a half dozen international chapters presently, and have interest from several other schools internationally about joining. So developing what our international strategy is, what the benefits of membership are for those outside the U.S., As well as in categories like high schools and community colleges, where it's not the traditional chapter structure. We're also have a group assembled to look at our regional conferences, which have been somewhat ad hoc and really entirely student run up to date. And now we're looking at how we can coordinate those across the regions, how the national office can better support those so that they have what they need to focus on the programming and the events. We're also, again, kind of at the back of house level, we just approved a budget for FY16 to hire three new staff members, which will significantly enhance our kind of operational capabilities as an organization and really allow us to put some muscle behind these new programs and events. And that includes one full-time staff member who will be dedicated exclusively to our website, our social media, our digital content. So we're actually getting ready sometime in August to launch a brand new website, which is something that the organization has needed for a little bit of time. It's, for being a group of young, forward-looking designers, our digital presence really has to be an accurate reflection of and resource to our members and really students everywhere. So we decided that really needed a full-time staff dedicated to that alone.
Well, that sounds like it's been a great year. And I think there's been some tremendous progress at the Institute this year with your leadership. And so, and all the people who were working with you, it sounds.
I'm proud of what we've accomplished and I'm very excited for what's to come.
Yeah. You certainly should be proud. So you're heading back home to Detroit. So, what's planned for you now that you're leaving AIAS?
I don't have much time this week. I actually basically turn around and fly right out to San Diego tomorrow for the NCARB licensing advisor. I'm an architect licensing advisor with NCARB, helping to support and educate those on the path to licensure. Seems fitting with my recent experience, so I'm looking forward to sitting on a panel at that event. After that, I return home again, and my wife and I are taking a little bit of a vacation to recover from the year we've spent 1,000 miles apart. She's actually out in South Africa right now. She's an archaeologist. She's on a dig. Decided to get her travel out of the way while I'm still out of town. So we'll be doing a little road trip out to Yellowstone. And then August 24th, I start my new position with Quinn Evans Architects in their Detroit studio. It's conveniently a block away from where I live, and we'll share a building with AIA Michigan and AIA Detroit, as well as Lawrence Technological University's downtown studio and gallery. So a nice central location. Quinn Evans specializes in adaptive reuse and historic preservation, and is looking to kind of expand their portfolio. So Detroit, while it's currently kind of a small satellite studio, is a growing office, taking advantage of the many opportunities with the existing building stock in Detroit and the kind of positive momentum that city has going on right now architecturally.
Yeah, you could not be in a better city for that type of architecture.
Pretty exciting. Yeah, and AIA will be hosting their leadership conference, or their grassroots conference in Detroit, the first of the split conferences this upcoming February. So I look forward to jumping right back to getting involved with the national events.
Yeah. So are you going to get more involved in AIA now that you'll be out into the profession?
Yeah, that's the plan. I am still on the AIA National Board as student director through the end of this calendar year, but I'm very much looking forward to getting involved with AIA Detroit, getting on their Emerging Professionals Committee and just kind of seeing where that takes me. I imagine from what I've heard that the AIA tends not to let go of folks who demonstrate a willingness to serve. So I imagine I have many years of involvement yet to come.
Well, that's good to hear, because you are certainly a leader, and a leader that's much needed in our profession. So thank you for your dedication.
I do what I can.
Yeah. So thank you for being here today. I appreciate your time that you slipped in between closing down shop and moving on to your next bigger and better adventures. But I wanted to acknowledge you for what you've done this past year and the time before that. You've certainly have set yourself to be a role model for other students as well as professionals. You've put yourself out there with the 7 and 7 and launched this PASS scholarship. You certainly will leave a legacy as you leave AIAS as this grows and continues. So thank you very much for your dedication to the profession and to the students who are emerging as professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It was an honor and a privilege to serve, and certainly a life-changing experience for myself. And all I can hope is that it's done some good for those that come behind me.
What's the best way for someone to contact you if they wanted to say thank you or ask you some questions about what we talked about today?
I can still be reached at pastpresident@AIAS.org or charlieclutch@AIAS.org, both direct to me, and will be active as I remain on the board for the next year.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for taking your time and sharing your knowledge here today on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Mark. Thanks so much.
If you would like to leave a review for this show on iTunes, please go to entrearchitect.com/iTunes, or in iTunes, you may find yourself there. You can just search for Entrepreneur Architect and you'll find us. But even more important to me is that you share this with a friend. We're growing here at Entree Architect, and it only happens with your help. I can't do this by myself. So go to your email right now and send a link to entrearchitect.com/episode85 and send this episode to all of your architect friends. Share it in a tweet, post it on Facebook, tell everybody you know. I appreciate your support for what I'm doing here, and I really thank you for spreading the word, because I can't do this without you. So complete show notes for this episode and the direct link can be found at entrearchitect.com/episode85. And just a reminder that this episode was sponsored by the Entree Architect Report. That's my free weekly newsletter. When you subscribe, I'll send you a short, easy-to-read email every Friday morning with direct links to both the weekly blog article and each of these weekly podcast episodes, so you will never miss one thing. Everything I do will come right to your inbox. I also share my weekly resource to help build better businesses for small firm architects, or maybe it'll be something to help you be more productive or live a happier life. And I share my thoughts for the week on a more personal level, and I share some of the behind the scenes of my life as a small firm architect. If you're not already a subscriber to the newsletter, you can quickly sign up at entrearchitect.com/newsletter. Just put your name and your email in there, and every Friday morning, you'll get a little message from me. And before we go, quote of the week. This one's from Art Gensler. I just returned from Denver, where I was participating at the AIA, the first ever AIA Entrepreneur Summit. And Art Gensler was the keynote speaker, the opening keynote. It was an excellent speech and a great event, a huge success. You want to find more about that, you can go to the Entrepreneur Architect Facebook page, and I wrote a little bit about that. Art Gensler's quote: "One reason Gensler has been so successful is that we run our firm like a business. What I mean by this is that we continually reinvest in our business. We offer competitive wages, reinvest in people, offer profit sharing. We incorporate all kinds of things that architects never thought about. I did this because I wanted to hire people and ask them to stay forever." My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am so honored that you are listening to me here today. I'm an entrepreneur architect, and I hope you come back next week. See you then.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
typically Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gary. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.